Thought for today. I make imagination my big suit in life, and I am happy all the time. I make imagination my big suit in life, and I am happy all the time. I make imagination my big suit in life, and I'm happy all the time. What does it mean to make something your big suit in life? It's making something your priority, making something your choice, making something that's very important to you. Imagination. How often have you used imagination to express yourself? How often have you used your creativity, your intuition, your inner awareness to create something? Well, not often enough. We want to do it every moment of our life. To do it every moment of our life, that really demands to be way out, because we're expected to be logical and reasonable. And if we're not logical and reasonable, we don't get along with people too well. Again, we always go back to the children, because the children are such an easy expression of what we're trying to say here. When you look at little children, they play by themselves, and they have a ball. They are not the least bit concerned of where the rest of the kids are or what they're doing. Oh, a little later in life, sometimes they get that way, but early on, they're not concerned. They just play by themselves, and they have their little world, they have their little imagination, they have their friends, and they're very content. Now, let's just say that again. These little children, playing by themselves in the sandbox, in a mud puddle by the side of the road, in the backyard, crawling through the grass, doing whatever they're doing, with their little cars or their little imaginary cars or imaginary people. They're content all by themselves. They're happy. They're fulfilled. They don't need anything else. Oh, it comes time for supper time, of course. It comes time for bedtime. It comes time for whatever. But let's take a little drift for a minute. The story of Romulus and Remus is not an impossible story. It's an unusual story, but not impossible. Rome was supposed to be founded upon these two fellows. Somewhere they were abandoned, and they had to make do on their own. Well, a she-wolf came along and found them and adopted them and raised them. Now, a she-wolf raising a human being in itself is a very interesting thing. Writers of fiction like stories like that, because that gives them a platform to take off with their imagination. How would these two youngsters survive? They had no clothes. They had no fur coat like the wolves did. They had no fangs like the wolves did to get meat and so forth. They had no quickness of limb like the wolves did to run around and do things. When they played with the other baby wolves, they had to teach the other baby wolves, don't bite so hard. My skin is not as thick as yours. But they played, and they had a good time. You're imagining this with me now. Now let's take another step. Let's go down to the jungles for Tarzan. Now, Tarzan might have been a real person. It's possible. But nobody was there except the apes. And so an author with imagination wrote all about Tarzan. He wrote all about how he was raised by the apes and what the apes did for him and how the apes handled him and how he and the apes became one and how his gentle nature was so admired by the apes. And the imagination of the author just took off, and we love it. We love it. We love it when science fiction writers tell us about the future. They tell us about the wonderful things that lie ahead for us. They tell us about all the wonderful things that are going to take place in our world. We love that. We love the fairy tales. Writers tell us that truth is stranger than fiction. And that's probably quite true. Truth is stranger than fiction because truth, nobody ever knows the whole truth. Nobody ever knows the whole truth and what's going on. Nobody has any idea what's really going on. We merely see the outpicturing. And so it is in fiction. We only see the outpicturing, but the author, the writer, he gets in there and he explains what's going on in the background. How Tarzan thinks to himself, now, how can I be with these apes and have a good time with them and yet not get mauled by them, not get crushed by them? They're big fellows, and when they take their baby in their arm, they take him firmly. Well, he wasn't crushed. He wasn't mauled. The writer had the apes be as tender with him as they were with their own little apes, the little babies. You see, imagination is a wonderful thing. And like little children, they can play for hours and hours and hours with their own imagination, with their own plaything. And they might not have a real car or a real boat. They might not have anything. But as they're climbing through the tall grass, they pretend that they're little insects crawling along. And then they'll see an insect and they'll start following it and they'll say, I wonder where he's going. Where is his home? See, right away they equate everything into their own way of living. I wonder where his car is. I wonder where his mommy and daddy are. Now, I don't know if he's a he or a she. It's kind of hard to tell on ants. And so he's got all these questions in his mind, so he doesn't care. He says, you're a he and you're a she. Whether they are or not, in truth, makes no difference because he's named them. So he's experiencing them however he wishes. Our imagination can take us to flights beyond the earth, beyond the universe, beyond all things. We can have metaphysical flights that bring us into the allness of the all. And they're fun things to do. But this is something that we have unlearned. Because as we get a little older, 3 or 4 years old, maybe 5, we're told to be practical. We're told we can't do everything we want to do. We're told we have to behave. We have to be in at supper time. We have to go to bed at bedtime. We have to get up at get-up time. We have to do the things that our mother and father want us to do. We have to be understanding of our sisters and brothers and not take their toys and not do things to hurt them. Or to be nice to them. We have to respect their space. Oh, that's a great one that has come up through the years. Respect my space. What a silly thing to say. No one can respect another's space. They can only respect their own space. And you do unto others as you would have them do unto you, which is not respecting their space. But if you're sad, you want someone to care about you. If you're happy, you want someone to laugh with you and be joyous with you. But you see, this is the world of cause and effect. And the world of cause and effect is a wonderful world. It's a wonderful place to live, but it's very limiting. It's very limiting because you think, what cause put the Great Bang into motion for the Big Bang bring creation into being? What cause caused the chaos to change from chaos to an orderly universe of stars and planets and galaxies moving around? What caused out of the chaos to come the experience of beings, of earths with life on them, with plants and flowers and trees and animals and man? Well, God did that. Well, who is God? Is God just some creation we made up so that we could have an explanation for things? And the answer is yes. There's no God as an exterior being living on cloud nine deciding what's going to happen next. Is it going to rain or is it going to be dry? Are you going to have lots of food growing or are you going to starve? Well, this is what the Hebrews believed. They believed in a God outside of themselves. They had to placate, and they had to bring tithes to the offering, to the coffers, so that the priests could have something to eat. This is what the Polynesians believed. They believed that there was a God in the volcano, and that if they would throw sacrifices, human sacrifices, to the gods, the volcano wouldn't overflow and come down upon the people. And the sacrifices were chosen as a joyous thing. It was a wonderful thing to give their life for the protection of their fellow beings. Very interesting, isn't it? Who created such a game? Who created such an interesting fairy tale? And yet the people all believed it because it was taught to them that that was true. You see, truth is stranger than fiction. In fiction, there are no such things like that. In fiction, we create things according to a scheme of our mind. We create things according to the scheme of our thinking. We use our imagination. And our imagination is unlimited because we only have to have the words to express what we have in our imagination. The Polynesian priests and king and whoever it all was, they had to develop a hierarchy of systems so that they would give these stories to the people. They had to have quite an imagination. Because you see, whenever you have a ruler, a king, a priest, a mother, a father, whenever you have someone who is in charge, you turn to them for protection. You turn to them for food and housing. You turn to them for livelihood. You turn to them. And when they fall or fail, when they're unable to provide you with the protection and the housing and the food and all the good things, then you begin to say to yourself, maybe they're not God. Maybe they're not almighty. Maybe they're not the ability. You see, and your imagination now starts creating them as ineffective. And as your imagination creates them as ineffective, they become ineffective for you. And you either have to move away from that country or you have to take over as king. And when you take over as king, then you say, I am Akhenaten the Great, the great pharaoh of all Egypt. I come out of my parentage, my father and so forth, who were great pharaohs. But I have a new idea. See, Akhenaten had a grand new idea for Egypt. I am going to recognize only one god, Aten, which is the sun. And so all will worship only the sun, only Aten. And so, during his reign, which was a very loving reign, all worshipped Aten. But you see, he didn't do a good job. He should have taken all the priests up to the hills and hung them by their heads. But he didn't do that. He didn't put the priests through a brainwashing program to say to them, this is the new God. The priests knew where their bread was buttered, and they agreed with him. And they knew that pharaohs come and go, but the philosophy stays forever. And so as soon as Aten was up in the sky and everybody worshipped him, as soon as that all happened, as soon as Akhenaten had a family and he had a wife and children, and he is the first pharaoh to be shown enjoying a home relationship, as soon as he died a young death, it may have been helped along by the priests, immediately the priest tore down his worship to Aten and reestablished their worship to the many gods. You see, imagination does many wonderful things. While Akhenaten had a great dream, and he had a great desire to share this with his people, and it was a noble desire. It was to be the one God, monotheistic in all ways. And yet, because he didn't play his story to the fullness of it, he didn't play his story to the maximum of it, he wasn't interested in killing. He wasn't interested in having wars. He had a very peaceful reign. He had some wars, but a very peaceful reign. But you see, he allowed the vermin to remain in the house. He allowed the rats to remain in the house. He didn't catch them and take them off to the jungle or to the desert someplace and throw them out. He allowed them to remain there. And so the moment he was no more, they came back and took over and brought back the old regime. And it didn't matter to Akhenaten. It didn't matter. Akhenaten was there just to do his thing, to be himself and have fun. But see, your imagination and my imagination oftentimes say we should have this forever. Well, for Akhenaten, it was forever. It was during his entire reign that he had this wonderful reign of Aten, where they worshiped the sun, and they realized there was only one God to worship. You and I, as we use our imagination, we may not use it on as broad a scale or as a grand a scope as Akhenaten did. But as far as we're concerned, it's just the same thing. And we have to be very careful that we don't have rats in our house, that we don't have vermin in our house that are going to undermine our dream. Because our dream is a good dream, whatever it may be. Our dream is whatever it may be. It doesn't matter. Our dream may be for peace on earth. Our dream may be for abundance for all. Our dream may be for health and harmony in the lives of all people. And so we go around living our dream. We are called the Pollyanna because we're dreamers. But we go around living our dream with our imagination, and with our imagination we see what others do not see. The little children see what others do not see, and it's quite likely really there. Little children see people that no one else can see. Little children see ants talking to them, and see the grass talking to them, and the flowers. Little children will lay among the flowers and say, "How are you guys doing up there? You know, you got a different way of living than I do, but it's nice." And he lives on top of the flowers, and as he lies on top of the flowers, and they get crushed. But he doesn't say, "Oh, you poor things." He said, "Thank you for being a bed for me." And those standing around him, he says, "Thank you for being sentinels here, watching over me." Nothing to watch over him for, but for watching over him, a phrase he's heard someplace. His imagination is endless and delightful. And if he should die lying there in the field because of a lightning bolt or because of a horse that came running along and stepped on him or something, you can think of many possibilities. If he should die, he's lived a great life. But he was only 4 years old. He lived a great life. He lived reality, which is not the world of illusion. He lived behind the illusions. He lived in the world of imagination. You and I can live in this world of imagination too, if we want to. And in part, we often do. Each one of you watches a delightful movie, and you place yourself in the character of the lead role. Each one of you, when you hear a diva singing grand opera, you sing with her, and your voice is just as glorious as hers, even though your mouth is shut. When you see golf magnificently played, you are striking that ball or bringing it to where it gives you great scores. You are doing, your imagination puts you there. When you read a book, your imagination leads you through the book. You put all of the flesh and blood on the beings and the circumstances in that book. As it explains to you what kind of a countryside it is, you see it. And there is no such countryside like that. It's just out of the author's mind. Well, it's in the author's mind. But now it's in every reader's mind. Similar. But every reader puts into their imagination, that is, they put their imagination into whatever it is that they're thinking about. And so if I say the Alpine foothills, you immediately go to the Swiss Alps and you think of an Alpine foothill, or to Italy. And I may be thinking Mount Shasta Alpine, because I'd never been to Italy or to Switzerland. So my Alpine slopes would be different from yours, but my imagination is just as fertile. And I dismiss it. And then as the story goes on, I visualize myself in those Alpine meadows, those Alpine mountains, those Alpine foothills, and I can see them all. And they're lovely. But it's my creation. It's my world. I read a book on history, and I read how great historians, that is, great men of history, have come down through time and have done wonderful things. And my imagination just joins them. I read the books on Saint Germain. And as I read these books, I visualize myself being there, doing the things he does. And sometimes doing it a little differently. You think of Adolf Hitler and the wonderful power that he wielded for a time. And you call it a terrible power, or you call it an atrocious power, or a hideous power. But those are just names. The power was not atrocious or hideous. The power was glorious. How the power is used sometimes may be not pleasant. But the power of itself is pure energy. Now, you visualize yourself being Hitler, and you say, if I were Hitler, I would do it differently. I wouldn't kill the Jews. I wouldn't do this and do that. Well, of course, if you didn't do those things, you wouldn't be Hitler either. So you can't say, if I were Hitler, I would do things differently. You'd say, if I were in those circumstances, I might do things differently. Because you're always you. You're always you with your imagination, with your drive and your inner fortitude. You're always you with your creativity. You're always you as God. But you're you as God as a unique being. You're not you as God as anybody else. You don't really care. You only care about yourself. The little boy lying in the grass, watching the ants marching along and calling it his great army. He's just being him. No other little boy is doing exactly that same thing. Yet all of the, we may have 100 little boys lying in the grass, but each would be doing it quite differently. Each would be responding to life quite differently. Each would be having a great adventure quite differently, but it would be wonderful. you and I, as much alike as we are as human beings and so forth, we think great in marvelous and super ways, but also greatly different. And that's the wonder of it. I am your creator, and I'm not going to create clones of me. I'm going to create you doing things that I would like to do if I were you, and you and you and you doing things that I would like to do if I were you. So vicariously through you, my creation, I do all these things, and it's wonderful. Now, what do? You create the same way. We want to learn how to turn on our imagination. We want to learn to turn on that creativity within us that knows no bounds. That's a wonderful thing. We were talking with Mark the other day, and Mark was saying, oh, be careful. When you use the word, I am the creator, be careful. There are some people who don't like it when you use the word, I am the creator, and they will say, yes, I'm home with you, and give you all sorts of ah yeses and ah noes about it. That doesn't change it. You're still the creator. You're creating these people saying ah yes or ah no. You're creating everything in your world. And what the heck? Just look at these authors. They write these fictional books that are so far out that why anyone would read such idiotic literature is unbelievable. Well, that's the thing. You are so far out. You are so creative. You are so imaginative. You have so much genius inside of you. And that's why you read those things. I think Anita was playing a little game the other day, and she was trying to get John's attention, or was it somebody else? Trying to get John's attention to open the gate. That was you, wasn't it? And so Sylvia was standing there, and she was saying, you know, oh, John, John. And he was driving in the tractor and didn't hear her. And so she thought she'd throw her hair over the fence like Rapunzel, you know, saying, come save the princess from being locked out here in the castle. And so finally John saw her and came to help her and save her, because the gate happened to be a little bit wet and it's swollen up with water, and she couldn't open it very well. What imagination! I mean, that has to go back into childhood. That has to go back into the fairy tales that we heard as children. That has to go way, way, way back. And yet, here, in this instant, she just brought it back to mind. How charming. Now, what if she had brought back to mind that here she was, some gorgeous creature, wanting this man to come into her life? How would she attract his attention? But she didn't think that. She thought, I am this princess high in the tower wanting to escape. Lovely thought. Lovely, creative, imaginative idea. This is the kind of things that happen when our imagination goes. We delight in every moment. Ellen came back from her adventure up in the hilltops, up in the mountaintops. And she comes back and she said she was singing to the hills her thoughts. Well, now, who can sing their thoughts to the hills? Well, Ellen can. And we all can. But we would put it in little different words, because we're different people. We would express it just a little differently, because we're unique. And we have our own imagination. Take that imagination and go with it, go with it, go with it, go with it, go with it. Don't be afraid of it. It'll take you on journeys that you could never have imagined possible. I make imagination my big suit in life, and I'm happy all the time. I make my imagination my big suit in my life, and I'm happy all the time. I make imagination my big choice in life, and I am happy all the time.